Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of June 21st through 28th. This week we were joined by Douglas Kmec, the United States Ambassador to Malta. The Pope recently visited Malta, so we spoke with Ambassador Kmec about that visit and also about a reflection on the death of his father that is featured in the current issue of America. I began by asking Ambassador Kmec what some of his responsibilities were as ambassador.
Well, the primary responsibility is to represent several hundred million people in a place that I suspect may not be well known to everyone in America because it is far away and is at to some degree outside the parameters of the local news stations that we follow on a day-to-day basis. And yet, this is a country of enormous importance to Christianity, has been of strategic importance in history, both in terms of the populations that have sought to occupy it and have occupied it, as well as being a pivot for purposes of faith, with the Muslim tradition being predominant to our south, with the Judaic tradition being in the Near East, and of course the tremendous commitment of faith that the Maltese people have to the Catholic tradition. What I do on a day-to-day basis is to try and earn the right to have the President's confidence, as well as to be as forthcoming about our interests in the region, how they are compatible with the interests of my host country, and how, by virtue of that compatibility, we can increase the levels of American investment in this area, promote a better understanding of faith, especially in this. We're about a year since the President came to Cairo and gave a very nice presentation on enhancing mutual understanding of each other's faith as a way of building mutual respect. And, of course, there are security concerns, and as there would have to be in a country where they have one of the busiest ports in the world, where there are goods and people moving at all times. One of the things we have a very strong relationship with Malta for is to making sure the operations of the port are conducted in a way that does not permit the trafficking in drugs or people or weapons that could harm us. So that's, in a nutshell, the life of the ambassador. But it begins each day with the Mass. When the President asked me if I would serve here, he happened to mention that there were 365 Catholic churches on the island, and I said, oh, great, sir, one for every day. He said, well, make sure you go. And the fact of the matter is that it was my habit to worship at my parish church at home on a daily basis, and here I get to see a new church almost every day.
As you mentioned, the country of Malta has a long Christian legacy, going back as far to St. Paul, correct?
Indeed. St. Paul shipwrecked on Malta in the year 60, as the Holy Father himself reflected when he came last month, or in late April. People seeing that fact without the benefit of faith might think it wholly accidental. Through the lens of faith, it seems quite different than that. No question but that the period of time that Paul was here planted the seed deeply and richly in the Maltese soil, and it is reflected every day of the year by one of the churches celebrating in a very large way the feast of the church.
Now, the Pope, as you no doubt know, has not traveled as much as his predecessor. So when he does pick a place to visit, it seems like it's for a particular reason why he wants to, either a symbolic gesture or for another reason. Why do you think he decided to visit Malta, you know, a relatively small country?
I think he was quite familiar with the profound faith commitment of the people of Malta from his previous service in the church, in the Congregation of the Doctrine of Faith, and in his assistance to his predecessor, John Paul II, who, of course, came to Malta twice. I think it's also very likely that the Pope wanted to see for himself exactly what I just described, this joy of living the faith tradition, of sharing it with your children, of sharing it with your neighbors, of having newspapers where the editorials are written from a faith perspective, be commonplace in a daily newspaper, and how tremendous that is to see that exist in 2010, when, of course, the Holy Father began his papacy and continues to this day to warn us of the dangers of secularism, of the hubris that is involved in that, and of the emptiness, ultimately, of not making room for Christ in our lives. At a time when he wanted to reach a larger audience, and through his travels now in Cyprus and elsewhere, reach an audience where the faith is one that sometimes has been crowded out by the thought that the necessities of life don't include room for the faith tradition. To turn that around and say the necessities of life demand space for the faith tradition, demand space for being of service to others, when there's still far too great a commitment to material things on the supposition that they can satisfy. The Pope wanted to visit an island where that all of those things had to some degree been resisted, where materialism had not guided its financial system, where service still is the order of the day through neighborhood parishes and clubs, and where in fact it's possible to know people by name and to be invested in their well-being, and to find that that doesn't tire one, that refreshes. In fact, one could see that refreshment in the Pope's reaction to Malta. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people that came out in every parish to see him refreshed him, so that by the time we said goodbye to the Holy Father the following day, after a very, very busy schedule, it seemed to me that he was lighter in his step, that he had indeed found that encouragement that he anticipated, and it really brought great happiness to the people to hear a few days later in his general audience in St. Peter's Square of him speaking so glowingly of his visit.
It's interesting, your presentation of how the visit went. I think, at the time of the visit, much of the coverage, as you know, here in the United States revolved around, various reports of, the sexual abuse crisis, and specifically a meeting that the Pope had with victims there in Malta. Is there anything you could add to the coverage of how that event went, or, what it meant to the people there?
Well, I think the Pope handled it in a very thoughtful, prayerful manner. I mean, the Pope has been extremely sensitive to this topic. I think well before he came to Malta in his, meeting with the Irish bishops and the discussion of the situation there. Obviously, Malta is part of the world, and so it's not immune from human imperfection, this one included. But there was nothing, the Pope was not about to to be have his approach to this shaped by the media. One could tell that he, you know, was that he had prayed on how to handle this question, that he was going to meet with anyone who had suffered abuse as a child, but in his time and in his way. And the time and the way he chose was before the Blessed Sacrament in the papal nuncio's residence. What emerged from that was not at all surprising, namely that people found the Holy Father to be genuine in his desire to heal that wound, that the precautions that he has urged upon the Church to be completely open with civil authority with its practice was accepted and found to be honest, and even, but most importantly, the men who, as boys, had carried this awful experience with them, came out and were filled with the Holy Spirit in the words that they reported the meeting, because they felt the presence of the Holy Spirit in that sanctuary. And so the Church, of course, has to confront this issue in a way that makes people as whole as possible. The Holy Father knows that. He conveyed that. But the Church also, at the same time, is sustaining a love for the Church that really transcends this ugliness. You know, the Holy Father expresses this very well in so many ways, with so many topics, that it clearly did not dominate the visit. The happiness of the visit was in no way diminished, and there was just a sense of justice had been served when the Holy Father picked his own time after Mass on Sunday in his own place, without advance announcement, you know, to the press or, you know, press conferences or anything of that nature, to deal personally, face to face, hands extended in prayer and in compassion to those who had been injured, but at the same time, none of that diminishing the joy of the visit and the purpose of the purposes of the Church, which of course are much greater than this single incident.
Now, finally, you know, you were obviously during the run-up to the 2008 election. You know, you're very engaged in sort of the political back and forth that went on in terms of the campaigns. Now that you're outside of, you know, obviously living outside of the United States, do you still feel the need to be engaged in some of the political discussions that are going on? Do you miss it? Do you still find ways to kind of keep in touch?
Well, I read America, and I have many friends who are teaching theology, who are in Catholic universities, or at Catholic University, where I was the dean of the law school, or at Notre Dame, where I taught for 20 years. So all of these people do keep me abreast of things happening in America. I will say my full-time responsibilities are here, and so with being on a clock that is much different than that of the United States, we are, well, I think we're 9 hours ahead of California, my home, and so oftentimes I feel like I've lived life twice sometimes when I do pay attention to news in the United States, because I've lived my day and then I wait for the United States to live theirs in order to keep the calendar even. Malta, influenced by its faith, long ago concluded, for example, that health care was a basic human right. And it has a hospital that is about the size of a state called Mater Dei that goes a good long distance toward delivering that commitment to health care that we're just beginning in the United States in terms of reaching out to those who don't normally have insurance or other ways to pay for that. In fact, if I might, while that discussion was occurring in the United States, one of the faculty members at the University of Malta Medical School suggested that, well, maybe, you know, we could tell you what we've been doing, you know, for a good long time, and you could compare that to some of the things that were being suggested for the United States. And I thought that was a tremendous opportunity for what we would call in the embassy trade public diplomacy. And so one afternoon after President Obama convened his session at Blair House, which we recorded, we replayed that session for the faculty of the University of Malta, which turned out in wide numbers, for the officers of the professional medical societies, and for the religious organizations involved in the provision of health care. And it was a wonderful discussion, very frank about, how difficult it is to find public resources to meet every need, but how one can go a good long way toward meeting those needs that the United States, at least at that point, had not yet done, but has now taken that step with the passage of its new legislation. And I think probably the most interesting thing that was said was toward the end, one of the doctors put up his hand and he said, you know, Ambassador, it really is a perspective. We go to medical school because we view it as an opportunity to be of service in the healing professions. We don't expect to make a very large salary at it. Oftentimes we know that the salary will be quite modest, or at least it will be, you know, no greater than the middle income salary that one could achieve at any one of a number of professions. The added benefit for us of the practice of medicine is being able to come to one's home and be able to reach out at a moment with specialized knowledge in a way that lifts the burden of a family confronting that. And we get the grace of experiencing that every day. That's our compensation. And so there's far less difficulty for us having that structural understanding than when you have an economic system that somehow has perceived the specialization of medicine to be one that has to be compensated at ever higher rates, and that, you know, ends up then passing those costs on through very expensive insurance premiums to families and employers. And all of our inclination is the opposite. And I can tell you that some young doctors took me aside also and mentioned something that I hadn't experienced in the United States since I was a boy, namely that was a doctor coming to the door. Of course we come to the door, they said. You know, how else would we get to know whether or not you, in fact, are following any kinds of nutritional practices that would prevent health difficulty? You get to learn those things when you see the circumstances in which someone lives, what kind of shelter they have, and whether it's adequate to their needs and so forth. That's an ethic of care and a medical compassion that I hope our reform will inspire, but certainly a form of international comparative knowledge that I would not have had the benefit to perceive had the president not given me this opportunity. And just one quick reflection about the grace of helping people in times of medical need. As you know, my father died late last month.
Yes.
And my brother and I had the privilege of being at his side for his final illness for a good number of days. Of course, it was sad to see a man whose motto in life was that one couldn't lose so long as one had faith, courage, and enthusiasm, and he often put great emphasis on the last word, be stricken by a cancer that so quickly ravaged his system such that he couldn't, toward the end, he couldn't walk and he could hardly speak, and of course there was no appetite. And yet, in the moments where my brother and I could lift him from the bed and carry him to the living room, where he could sit in his comfortable chair and feel for those moments that he was still with us and sharing that time. As we moved him ever so carefully, and he was a big man, my brother in holding the back and myself holding my dad from the front, the three of us were like dancing. And we would dance from the bedroom into the living room to the bathroom and back again, you know, several times during the day. And all I could think of was how blessed I am to be here at that moment, to be able to, in essence, embrace my father at a moment when his strength no longer allowed it. And the metaphor of faith was just overwhelming, because I thought back to the Holy Father's visit of how he was embracing the experience of Malta as a way of saying to the rest of the world, it's possible, it can be done. Allow yourself to feel the commitment of faith. You will not need after that. Your needs will be met. And this, of course, was the simple message of my brother and myself to my father. Don't worry, Dad. We're here. If you're thirsty, we will go out and get you something to drink. If you have any desire for food, we will find that. I'm grateful for the experience that the president has given me the privilege of having to represent our nation in this place far away, because I've learned so much about a life that is really shaped by faith in a way that's second nature. Maybe first nature is the right way to express it. And then when my father's illness came upon us suddenly, I could carry some of that Maltese faith tradition with me back toward that experience, and it had even had the extra asterisk of the Holy Father sharpening its understanding for me at that moment. I doubt that there will be too many times in my life where I will feel the presence of the Spirit more than I do now. And I wish one thing for Americans, and this may sound like a tourism ad, is come to Malta. If your travels bring you to Rome, or if they bring you to London or Paris or one of those places, it's a short distance and well worth the stop, because you will, I'm absolutely certain that you will see what the Holy Father found, and that is people who pray, who live out their prayers, and who are being of service to others in the way that Christ was of service to man throughout his life, an example for us.
You make it sound like a wonderful place, and we want to thank you for spending for sharing some time with us and describing that country that, you know, may seem so small and removed from our experience, but obviously can probably teach us a lot about our faith. And we wish you, you know, of course, our condolences on the passing of your father. But Ambassador Kamek, we want to thank you very much.
it's been a pleasure to speak with you, and if you do come, I'll have a room for you. Just knock on the door.
Well, thank you very much.
I want to thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. We are on our bi-weekly summer schedule now, but we are posting content every week online. And this week you can check out a report from New Orleans from Kerry Weber, assistant editor, who was down there recently looking at the oil spill in the Gulf. We also have a slideshow of urban farms in Detroit. A reminder that you can respond to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.